Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Greetings and salutations to you, fair people of Portland. And by the way, if anyone should ask, that was entirely my fault just now. Yesterday it was my elbow bumping the space bar. Today it was my other elbow actually bumping a power cable. So there you go. It's all part of this being one of the finest programs you have ever heard. From high above the milkpacking district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News on PDX.FM. This is a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now, readying a vast swath of happenings, including but not limited to the following.
The father of missing child Kyron Harmon has filed for divorce and a restraining order against his wife. Police investigate violence on a MAX train. And an elderly man with a machete is jailed after an incident at a taco truck.
That is fantastic. And a taco truck, you say?
Yes.
To shreds, you say? Splendid. Excellent. And what was the thing immediately before the machete?
Police investigate violence on a MAX train.
Oh, on a MAX train, you say? As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when this hour began. And if you wish to listen to us on a mobile device, or mobile device, as some say, you can do that as well. It is mobile, M-O-B-I-L-E. .pdx.fm. Mobile.pdx.fm. That was the exciting part in the broadcast where I see if I can actually transition between sounds without, drooling onto the keyboard and shorting something out. Without further ado, I give you Legion of News.
The father of missing Portland boy Kyron Harmon has filed for divorce and taken out a restraining order against his wife, Terry Harmon. Mr. Harmon has moved out of the home with his 18-month-old child. Early Monday, Terry Harmon denied to reporters that Kane had moved out. Family members released a statement Monday saying they were in support of the investigation into Kyron's disappearance. The statement read in part, "Any actions taken by the investigation or by us are based on the best interests of Kyron and Kiara and comply with the law. Beyond this, we have no comment on the matter."
Wait, who was it that said that they were in favor of what?
The family is saying that, hey, anything that happens is all because we're supporting the investigation.
All right. So it's not like they had to.
It was sort of a bland, meaningless statement.
Right? It wasn't like they had to affirm that they were in favor of the investigation
happening. Yeah. The interesting part about it is that the statement was signed by Kyron's father, stepfather and mother. But Terry Moulton Harmon, the stepmother, was not included in the statement and was not even aware that it was coming out.
I'm sure it's just an oversight, Don. What are you implying? What are you trying to say? I'm reading between your lines right now.
Well, I have so much more to tell you, Rick Emerson.
Okay.
So much more. Kyron vanished 3 weeks ago, and since then, Terry Moulton Harmon, the boy's stepmother, has been singled out in a questionnaire sent to parents and staff of Skyline School. A lifelong friend described Terry Moulton Harmon's unhappiness with a second polygraph test. Moulton's father, who's 72, told People magazine that the finger points at the stepmom and she's trying to be cooperative. She's had two polygraphs. Police have seized her truck twice and questioned her for up to 6 hours several times. Police scoured scores of questionnaires turned in by parents of Skyline Elementary School, children, staff members, and even delivery drivers for clues last week as they tried to untangle the mystery.
Wait a minute. So this is the stepmother that they're leaning on like this. All right.
She's the one who brought him to school and...
I thought he walked to school by himself.
No, she took him... She said she took him to school in the morning, went into the school with him. There was going to be some kind of a science fair.
Did anyone see him?
They discussed it. I'm not sure.
Like, I've just become John Munch. Did anybody see you do this? Do you have any witnesses?
Well, among the questions on the questionnaire, which police said were intended to help trigger people's memories, questions included, did your child see Kyron's stepmom, Terry, on 6410 at or near the school? And did your child see a white Ford F-250 pickup on 6410 at or near the school?
Have you noticed you're buying a lot of quick lime?
The Other questions were more generic, including, did your child see Chiron on that date? Where did your child see him?
Does she seem to own a great number of pairs of shears?
Hot.
No, I'm just, you know, just to get a fix on who she is as a person. I'm sure there's nothing untoward happening.
That's right.
That's my official statement. I am sure that there is nothing at all amiss that would cause them to apparently single her out in the questionnaire.
Her collection of duct tape and shovels is not at all suspicious.
Why do you have to take everything and make it ugly, Dawn? Why must you traffic in crudities here on these airwaves?
Meanwhile, investigators have intensified their search in the area of Sovi Island. Searches in wetsuits were seen moving through waist-high water while someone on shore provided directions to them. A dive team also searched swamps and ponds around the rural northwest Portland area, and crews have searched in the Multnomah Channel.
If one cannot find, if one cannot try to find a little levity where one can, then one has already given in to the bleakness of life. I like the idea that the guys are searching on Sovi Island where somebody stands on the shore and gives directions, which, by the way, is exactly how Portlanders operate. No, you got about 6 inches. Back up. No, left. No, damn it. No, back out again. No, you're not even parallel. No, forward, back, damn. You know, and meanwhile, your eggs are inside getting cold or, you know, whatever.
On a completely unrelated note, I need you to clear up something in the text box. Someone contends that that I, Dawn Taylor, and Susan Reynolds are the same person. So I need you to disabuse them of this notion. Please?
I'm sorry? What is their evidence for believing that you and Susan Reynolds are the same person?
I don't know. I'm just
saying.
Do you
have a tonally similar voice or something?
Perhaps.
Who is the, is there any
This is Randy, formerly in Vegas.
All right. Is there any explication given to his question or his assertion?
No. He just says that I don't care what you people say. I still contend that Dawn Taylor and Susan Reynolds are the same person.
Well, have at it, friend. Don't let me stop you. I mean, I don't know where you are now. You were in Vegas, so presumably wherever you're living at the moment is less interesting. So who am I to take away what small joy you might have by pondering the true identity of Dawn Taylor? I mean, it is fair to say that if you go to legionofnews.pdx.fm, your face is covered. So, I mean, make of that what ye will.
I like the idea that actually Dawn Taylor is just some kind of pseudonymous persona put on by Susan Reynolds.
Could you with the $9 words. Yeah. Well, let me put it this way. If you were, in fact, Susan Reynolds, then that would be awkward for everybody involved. Because she is at the last... I mean, one can never really tell without a fit. But the last time I checked, she was still employed by Alpha Broadcasting.
Hence the need for a pseudonym.
Well, Hey. All right.
You never see us together.
That's true. All right. Well, now we have to get her on the show at some point, because that won't be awkward. Well, they can't fire me again. I mean, I guess they could. They could hire me only to fire me. By the way, the Rick Emerson show is going to be coming up at 1 o'clock today. And I'm not trying to be like a jerk where I tease a thing that you don't get to hear if you're not a subscriber or whatever. But we are going to make... you know the announcement I'm going to make at 1 o'clock. I'm not trying to be that guy, so please forgive me. I'm sorry. I'm just saying, I don't want to say it's... I mean, it's great. It's not earth-shattering. How would you describe the excitement in terms of, or the announcement in terms of how important it is?
I would use the phrase pretty damn cool.
It's pretty damn cool. There you go. You heard it from Dawn Taylor. A pretty damn cool announcement that's coming up at 1 o'clock on the Rick Emerson Show. This is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Police in Portland are investigating a violent attack on a MAX train. Whether it is a vicious beating or self-defense is up in the air.
It's a vicious beating.
Jason Brunson said he got a huge scare Friday night around 11:45 on a MAX train at the Rose Quarter station when a strange man started yelling at him. He was in my face saying derogatory things, said passenger Jason Brunson. Things started to escalate and fast, but Brunson tried to remain calm. I was scared to death, to be honest with you, said Brunson. He asked me to get off at the next stop to fight him at the Lloyd Center, and I didn't want to.
I don't even know what we're talking about here. I have no idea what's going on in this story. A guy's on a MAX train from where?
I don't know where he's coming from, but he's on a MAX train at the Rose Quarter station.
Is he going to Lloyd Center? Is he heading there?
I have no idea. He's just at Rose Quarter. He may have just been passing through the area. The germane portion of this is that a fellow started yelling at him and demanded that he get off the train to fight him at Lloyd Center.
I understand. Well, that's where I'm going. That's where I'm going with this, because let's just be honest.
Rose Quarter and Lloyd Center are quite near each other, so it's like, next exit, Lloyd Center, we're fighting.
I understand. Well, but see, that's my thing. If he was coming from Lloyd Center, then let's be honest.
Well, that wouldn't be the next, the next stop.
Look,
which is what
maybe you could just not be such a nagging Nelly for just one damn minute, huh? Huh?
How do you admitted you weren't listening to the story, so I'm trying to explain it to you.
It's not that
he
I'm...
asked me to get off at the next stop to fight him at Lloyd's Center.
It's not that I'm not listening.
He
it's
said.
Just it's just that I'm not paying attention. That's really where we're at with this. I guess the point I'm trying to make here, Don Taylor,
okay.
is that if one is just in the course of one's everyday activities going to Lloyd's Center. Or coming from Lloyd Center. If that is in any way on your traveling route, we know a lot about you as a person. And it's not like, you know, it's not like fighting is a new thing to you. You probably are coming to or going from some sort of altercation with somebody. That's just the way of that place. So, anyway, was he antagonizing the guy or that the guy just didn't like the look of him?
No, I believe he was simply just riding the train.
Minding his own business?
11:45 at night, so it was late in the evening. Yeah. Man started yelling at him, saying derogatory things. What those were, we don't know. And then told him to get off at the next stop to fight him. But this is where it gets even more interesting. Because this, at that moment, an older man holding a cane started hitting the threatening man over the head. The man fell to the ground, and that's when the police were called to the scene. Greg Stewart with the Portland Police Bureau said, just because you get someone picking on you doesn't mean you have carte blanche to hurt them or send them to the
hospital.
That's
not true. No, this is me. This is Rick Emerson right now saying you do, in fact, have that carte blanche. I am giving you permission.
Although Jason Brunson, the fellow who was being threatened, who the guy wanted to fight, says that the guy with the cane was a hero. It's a surprise that someone would come to my aid.
You realize that I lost track of everybody in the story like an hour ago. All I know is
there's a guy, there's a threatening guy, there's a guy with a cane.
Okay, but then
there's
a third guy. Oh, just hold on a second. Guy number one riding the bus,
right.
the max. Guy number two comes up, hey, you, let's fight. Guy number three says, not so fast there, Sonny, and gives him what for with a cane.
Right.
All right. All right, there you go. Can I just tell you this? Because weird things happen on that max. And in that area in general, the last time I was at Lloyd Center, I was parking on the street, you know, because you go there at the wrong time. It's when I went to the dollar store. You're not able to get parking inside. So I had to park on the street where the parking meters are. And so I'm there, and I'm just minding my own business, putting money in the parking meter, and there's a homeless guy just sitting there looking like Navin Johnson, just clutching a paper bag. And he actually says, you've got the best ass. And it's like I didn't really know what to say. I didn't know how to – what is one's response to that?
You say thank you.
See, and I thought – but then it's like you're just inviting – I mean, if it was anybody else, if it wasn't homeless, you know, if it was –
What, his opinion of your ass is less valid because of his living situation?
Well, it's not less valid. It's just that it's an opinion I don't intend to use for any – I don't intend to put that into action or to ask him to back up his assertion with some sort of, you know, demonstrable indication of his assessment.
Look,
I'm not going to make out with the homeless guy.
Well, yes, but you're not going to make out with many people who say nice things to you.
If you speak to that, it's not true. I think really, unless you're homeless. The thing is – if you speak to the homeless, it just encourages them. If you feed them, if you clothe them, it just encourages them.
And from the text box, someone shared, and then he pooped next to your car.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I appreciate that, sir, madam. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
An 81-year-old man armed himself with a machete Sunday and chased after a Salem taco stand worker.
I wish I'd been armed with my Danny Trejo son. That's okay.
Salem police said Manuel Mesa was upset because he believes someone who works at the mobile taco stand stole his drill. When the worker denied stealing the tool, Mesa left, but returned with a machete and chased the man around the taco stand.
Awesome.
The mobile taco stand sets up shop every weekend on Northeast Portland Road. People who work in the area said it's typically a quiet business. This is a little frightening, and with the state police being right next door, it's kind of unusual to have anything happen around this area, said Art Olson, who works nearby. No one was injured. Mesa was taken into custody on charges of menacing and attempted assault. He made his first court appearance on Monday.
Where was this located?
Salem.
Oh, so it wasn't here, so it's not like it's going to add a little thrill to my day. And he was 86?
He was 81.
81? I mean, you got to give it to a guy like that who still has spunk. Yeah. A little get up and go.
Yeah, I saw a little bit more of this on the news, coincidentally, after I printed it out. Mesa actually owns a business where he sells tools, and the building is just like about 100 yards away from where the taco truck sets up.
Awesome.
And he got it into his head that they'd taken his drill.
No, well, I mean, do we know for a fact that the guy didn't?
I'm assuming he probably did. I believe that, you know,
just our opinion, by the way.
I don't think that this fellow would, you know, go after someone with a machete just, you know, willy-nilly. It sounds legitimate. You took my drill. No, I didn't. comes back with a machete, give me my drill.
Higgledy piggledy, rat-a-tat-tat.
Then the chase ensues with the Benny Hill music going around the taco
fantastic.
Truck.
Fantastic. He steals the tacos. He comes for justice. That was a whole lead up just so I could do that. That's all it really was. That was just, he wears the diapers. It was the only reason really for this story is so I could do my bad grindhouse voice. All right. She reads the news. She is Susan Reynolds.
Portlanders who don't pay their sewer bills are about to get hammered with higher property taxes. The city is forcing a trade-off because it says there's no other way of collecting the customer debts. Unlike water, gas, and electricity services, they can't shut off the sewer service.
In your face.
It's buried underground, so that leaves sewer bill collectors only one way to force payment. They're transferring all of the sewer customer debt to Multnomah County's assessor, who collects property taxes. In other words, ongoing long overdue sewer debt will be converted into property tax debt if it's left unpaid.
Well, what if you don't have I guess if you don't have a house, then you wouldn't be paying that anyway, I guess.
Right.
Is how that works.
Right.
Now, what is the difference between, let me ask you this, Don Taylor, what is the difference between a sewer and a septic tank?
Sewer is public. I believe septic tank is on your property, and you have to maintain it yourself.
Wait,
sewer is also the line that drains stuff.
Where does the septic tank drain? Or does it not drain? It doesn't just fill up.
No, I believe you have to have someone service your septic tank. They have to come and pump it out. You see those big trucks with the
I think we had to do that when I was a kid, actually. Boy, a smell like you could. That was five counties over. You knew what was going on over there. So the deal with the sewer is you just your water, your waste, your whatever just goes into a big tunnel somewhere.
Right.
And then we're having to pay to maintain that.
And then there's also the street sewer systems, which are separate.
Wait, is that not the same thing?
The waste product and I believe the waste product and the water that goes from the sewers, there are different lines.
It doesn't all just go into one big pipe somewhere?
Yeah. Poop is not going into into the sewer underneath your sidewalk, for example.
Why do you have the word blue like that? See, I figured that was the case, though. I thought that's what happened. I figured there was just one big...
No, you would smell that.
It's hard to tell in my neighborhood. What with the homeless people defecating in my driveway all the time and everything. So I was never really clear about that. I remember when I was a child... there was an episode of the very fine television program 321 Contact. It's the reason, it's the moment when everything happens. Contact. Where they paid a visit to a sewage treatment plant, which when you're like a 9-year-old boy is the best thing ever. It was like the only way that could have been better is if there had been piranha of some kind there. And I remember just finding it endlessly fat, not like a place you want to work, you understand, or visit it anyway. But it is sort of a fascinating thing. And the idea that the earth is sort of a closed system like that. So I don't have to worry about this because I rent. I don't own, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, there you go. By the way, this is a little...
Although it could increase your rent because the person who owns your property might end up having to pay higher property taxes. But only if they themselves have been scofflaws when it comes to paying the sewer.
I was just going to say scofflaw. Excellent. Well done.
I actually, pretty much every year when I was in elementary school, we had to go on a field trip to the sewage treatment plant. We had
really?
This,
Were you yeah, being punished for something?
We had this really, really big fancy one like in El Segundo, like two towns up from where I lived, called Hyperion Outfall.
Hyperion Outfall sounds like a place where you would do the Kessel Run in less than 3.5 parsecs or whatever the hell.
And it like treated waste and then pumped the cleaned water out into the ocean. It was like on the
Hyperion
beach.
Hyperion Outfall.
And then there was also, the other thing is that a number of the employees there had a Dixieland band. And every time there was any kind of a public thing, like a concerts in the park or some kind of a town fair, they would always say they were the Hyperion Outfall Serenaders.
All right. Well, I guess it's better than, the poo strainers or whatever their more colloquial name might be.
That's their softball team.
The thing that I always wonder about sewage treatment plants, and I don't get to use that phrase nearly often enough, is...
Kessel Run in 12 parsecs, by the way,
whatever.
From the text box.
Just stow it, friend. You know what I was going for there. Here's the thing I wonder about sewage treatment, and I'm not trying to be disgusting. I don't even really have to try. It just sort of oozes from my pores naturally
sewage?
Like a pheromone. No, not like sewage. Yes, it oozes from my pores like sewage because I was hooked up incorrectly at birth, and it hasn't killed me yet. In fact, it doesn't even leave my body. I just spend a lot of time wandering around getting bigger. The thing I wonder about, though, is, how do I put this? You've got your liquid waste, they bleach it or they do whatever it is they do, and it goes into the ocean. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even really know. I don't know how that works either. I mean, that's a thing where, I hate to put it this way. They're not just They're not just like funneling pee right into the ocean, are they?
No, it gets filtered.
But see, with what? Okay, but here's the thing. When you, sorry, I dropped my pen. When you say it gets filtered, though.
It gets filtered to take out particulate matter, and then it gets treated with chemicals.
Okay, but see, I'm not disagreeing with you as such or saying that that's not true.
Keep in mind, I had to go to this place every year of my childhood.
I'm just saying, when you say that, though, it's a little bit like saying, well, they clean it with science and math. I mean, when you say they clean it with chemicals, like what does that even mean? They don't just dump Clorox in there.
Well, it's more sophisticated than that, but essentially, yeah.
All right.
And then, the solid waste is.
Where does that go? Is my question.
Well, the solids are actually filtered out, and they're repackaged and resold as fertilizer. If you go to, if you ever see bags of fertilizer for garden that says it contains humus, that's actually treated human waste.
Humus.
Humus.
Is it spelled like hummus?
Only with one M.
Really?
Yeah.
So there is Hamas, there is humus, and there is hummus, and
yes.
They're all three different things.
Yes.
Fantastic. All right. There you go. See, I asked, you answered, now I am smarter. Knowing is half the battle, kids.
And now all of those field trips to the treatment plant have paid off.
There you go. See, and you were said, I'll never use this for anything.
I really did.
That's true. Now, geometry, on the other hand, you'll never use that for anything. Use that for dick. All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
An Oregon doctor accused of botching a string of operations while he was chief surgeon at an Australian hospital was found guilty Tuesday of killing three of his patients and grievously harming another. Jayant Patel, 60, was ordered into
Patel. Ravindam Patel. Sorry.
Was ordered into police custody until Thursday's sentencing after a jury returned guilty verdicts on all charges against him. The trial came more than 25 years after questions were first raised about Patel's competency and marks a milestone for many former patients and their families who've waited years to face the man they accuse of irreparably damaging their lives. At the trial, prosecutor Ross Martin described Patel as a bad surgeon motivated by ego who tried to restore his reputation by carrying out surgery he was not competent to perform. He had worked at Kaiser Permanente Hospital here in Portland.
What?
Yes, he did.
Oh,
he did work here, banned him from liver and pancreatic surgeries in 1998 after reviewing 79 complaints about him. The Oregon Board of Medical Examiners later cited him for gross or repeated acts of negligence. In 2003, he went to Australia. He left Australia in 2005 just as the questions began to be raised about his previous record. At the trial, Martin said Patel was driven by ambition and a toxic ego in a pattern of negligence that included performing surgeries that U.S. authorities had banned him from undertaking, misdiagnosing patients, and employing sloppy techniques.
It seems like, by the way, and this is just my estimation, is my read on the situation, it seems like rather than just banning him from pancreatic and liver surgeries, if you're going to do that, why wouldn't you just ban him from surgeries altogether? That seems like an easier and less time-consuming way to do this. So you, the knife, put it down. Never again.
Well, now I'm only assuming you can't do surgery legally on things that you're not technically trained in,
that
you're not
true?
Licensed in.
I guess that's true. So you get like it's not like you're a liver surgeon and like a guy comes in with a bad foot and
you can't say they won't let me take out appendix anymore, so I'm going to be a brain surgeon.
Nobody's around, so I'll just I'll just handle this one if it's okay with you guys. All right, wonderful.
The jury heard evidence that Patel rushed one patient into surgery on his esophagus without proper planning, then failed to spot profuse internal bleeding and stitched up the patient. The 77-year-old died of blood loss. Another patient died after Patel failed to identify the cause of rectal bleeding. And in yet another case, Patel found a benign cyst during a colonoscopy, but rather than ordering a biopsy, he removed the entire bowel. The specimen later showed there was no sign of cancer.
He botches the diagnosis. He kills the patients. He removes the colon.
His defense attorney urged the jury to find him innocent.
That's going to be a great job.
Saying that all of the patients involved in the case had consented to surgery and knew the risks involved.
God bless the legal system. And I mean that with all serious. I mean that sincerely, by the way. Lawyers get a bad rap. It takes a special brand of cojones to stand up there and go, look, they went to the hospital. Whatever happened after that's their fault, really. I mean, they should not have gotten sick and gone to the hospital expecting to be healed. What were they thinking? F them. And then he just goes and he sits down, and then he moves for dismissal. And then everybody goes to lunch. Fantastic. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
How about we do a little science news?
How about that science news? It's time for science On the March. This is Don Taylor.
Oscar the Cat may have lost one of his nine lives, but his new prosthetic paws make him one of the world's few bionic cats. After losing his two rear paws in a nasty encounter with a combine harvester last October, the black cat was outfitted with metallic pegs that link the ankles to new prosthetic feet and mimic the way deer antlers grow through the skin.
Wait, no, you're going way too fast. I'm so confused. It sounds like his whole body has now been replaced. He's been linked with prosthetic what that hooked to metal?
He has pegs.
Oh, they're peg legs, but they're metal. All right, okay.
After his farming accident, which happened when the 2.5-year-old cat was lazing in the sun in the British Channel Isles, his owners took him to their local veterinarian. In turn, the vet referred Oscar to Dr. Noel Fitzpatrick, a neuro-orthopedic surgeon in Ishing, 35 miles southwest of London. Together with biomedical engineering experts, Fitzpatrick gave Oscar two metal prosthetic implants. These were attached to custom-built faux paws. That's funny.
Faux paws.
That are a bit wobbly to imitate a cat's natural walk. But first he covered the brown implants with black tape to match his fur.
Because, of course, you know, the cat, his style is paramount.
Yes, he would be embarrassed otherwise.
No, of course not. Faux paws. What is this? I mean, is that, let me ask you this. Sure. When you write something like, not that you, I mean, if you use the phrase faux paws, is that where you are secretly hoping that the readers get it, or are you hoping that no one gets it and you can just sort of commend yourself on a smug use of the English language? Well done.
I think it's smug either way.
All right, fantastic. By the way, does anybody else think it's a terrible idea to be giving cats some sort of pneumatic or running ability?
Well, actually, this is really, really interesting because the veterinarians inserted the peg-like implants. They drilled them into his ankle bones and his rear legs. The metal implants are attached to the bone where he lost his paws and were coated with a substance that helps bone cells grow directly over them. And this is something that they're actually doing a lot of experiments with veterans who have, like, lost limbs, you know, in combat. Trying to, because previously when implants would be tried with metal, the body would reject them.
Right.
But they're now creating new biomedical substances that they can coat the metal with, that skin cells and bone cells actually grow and fuse to the metal.
You know what I'm thinking right now, of course, though. I mean, it's just as sure as you know your own name, you know what I'm thinking.
What? I don't know.
I don't even want to say it out loud. I mean, that is like some full-on Skynet business happening right
there.
Well,
yes.
If you just say, look, you know that hand you used to have? You know, it doesn't work anymore. We had to get rid of it. We've got a brand new metallic hand that your body will adopt and raise as its own. It's sort of like a Romulus and Remus of the body. You know what I mean? Where, you know, then suddenly the metallic hand, you know, and the organic hand, you know, that they work in tandem with one another. And if you can treat your body, I mean, not that I would turn it down. I mean, if somebody wants to give me a metallic hand, I'm all for it. I mean, bring it on. I'm just saying it is a little bit of that where you're venturing. It's not really like you're on the island of Dr. Moreau. It's sort of like the Marina Inlet of Dr. Moreau, where you can see the land of science gone wrong just over the crest, but you're not entirely sure that you're actually going to get there. It just seems like it could go. There's no two ways. There's no third way about this. There's only two directions that this story could go. One is the awesome bionic commando way, where I end up swinging through the jungle with an extendable hand, sort of gadget style. The other thing is where the cats just rise up against us. I mean, like, faster than they already are. So, all right.
Well, I would encourage anybody who actually finds this moderately interesting, go online and do a search. There's a video. The cat that wasn't part of the story that I just read, but I did. I was so interested in this, I looked more stuff up about it. There's actually a reality show, a British reality show about the guy who did this called, like, Bionic Vet. And the whole Oscar the Cat part show is part of it. And there is video you can find online about when they first attached the little wobbly, like, they look like just little foam nubbins, like you would put in the bottom of something so you don't scratch the floor.
Right.
But they wobble a little. And as soon as they were attached and they let the cat start walking around, it's like within seconds he started figuring it out.
Oh, to have a brain the size of a pea. I guess these are my legs.
Yeah.
They looked different earlier. I don't know. Maybe I've lost weight. Well, off to work.
It was pretty darn interesting.
I'm not trying to be, you know, I'm a big fan of science and the future and technology and advancement and humanity taking the next bold leap into the iterations of our evolution. It's just really the cat Skynet thing.
Yeah.
Because now I'm sensing some unholy alliance between the feline world and the robotic world as they, you know, as they come to us and then bat us around for like 1,000 years before killing us.
Well, the one advantage we really have over cats is that they don't have, say, thumbs. So you start giving them bionic limbs.
I was
just
going to say.
Over.
You know, the thing is, though, now that the cat has his legs back, you're going to go on and he's going to be up on the workbench soldering away late at night. What are you doing in there, Chester? Nothing. He's keep grinding down a new set of limbs. Have you seen that? There's actually several of these folks now. It was a couple years ago, that guy that was in the Olympics, and he had lost his legs, I think, in a car accident. Or maybe he'd never had them. He might have been born legless. But they had given him the those prosthetic legs, but they weren't shaped like legs. They were shaped like just sort of a big metal, like capital C's. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I haven't seen that.
They were basically, they looked, I guess that's the only way to put it. They were shaped like a huge capital C, but turned backward. You know, it was like a half circle.
Okay.
And they were mounted on his legs, so as though you were standing, again, on a large capital C, perhaps on Sesame Street. And he had one of those at the bottom of each knee, and he ran on those, and they curved up enough at the bottom that they didn't catch, the end didn't snag on the carpet or whatever. And as he ran, they compressed and then sprang back up the way that your knee would, the way that your cartilage would compress and spring back. And they showed the guy running on the beach, you know, and he's running at some superhuman like Jesse Owens speed. And I'm just sitting at home shoving Cheetos into my mouth and just feeling like an ass. And then there was a whole thing about, like, is he going to be allowed to compete because he's got metal legs that can't be damaged or whatever. And then I think he actually did end up, like, wiping out on one of the turns or something. But it's just, it's one of those things that is sort of, it's on the one hand, it's great. On the other hand, it's terrible. Because then you realize you even have even like less excuse for not achieving, you know, like the bare minimum, you know, in your life. Like I'm just sitting at home just scratching myself and covered in grease and just going, oh, crap.
Yeah, those kind of stories are always supposed to be inspirational. And they really end up just making you feel like you're wasting your life.
Yeah, because you're just, because I got perfectly good legs. You know what I use them for? Nothing. Yeah. Moving myself from the bathroom and back to the couch. That's it. All right. Is that the end of Science on the March?
I did have one other science story I wanted to share. The Terra Fugia Transition, a light aircraft that can convert into a road-legal automobile, is to go into production after being given a special weight exemption by the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration. The Transition was designed as a light sport aircraft, the smallest kind of private airplane under FAA classification, with a maximum weight of 1,320 pounds. But the manufacturers found it impossible to fit the safety features, airbags, crumple zones, and roll cage, that are required for road vehicles into that weight. So, but the FAA has granted the Transition an exemption, allowing it to be classified as a light sport aircraft, despite being 120 pounds over the limit. The two-seater Transition can use its front-wheel drive on roads at ordinary highway speeds, with wings folded, at a respectable 30 miles per gallon. Once it's arrived at a suitable takeoff spot, an airport, or an adequately sized piece of flat private land, it can fold down the wings, engage its rear-facing propeller, and take off. The folding wings are electrically powered.
Is this in America or is this elsewhere?
This is here.
They're going to be able to sell you a car. You'll be able to buy a car that actually turns into an airplane.
Yes.
All right. That's fantastic, but it's not what people want.
No.
So here's the thing. Rick Emerson understands few things in this world, but he understands what the people want. He understands what the American consumer is willing to pay for. By the way,
plus they also cost $194,000.
But here's the thing. Here's what people will spend money on, though. It's not a car that turns into a plane. It is a car that turns into a helicopter. That's what people want. Because the plane, it's like you got to get out and you got to fold down the wings and you got to get the, you got to get the runway and you got to get, you know,
you have
500
yards. You have to have taxi space.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Is like the only place you would really ever be using the plane is at an airport, which I guess is okay. But if you're going to go to the trouble of spending $200,000 on a car/plane, you're probably a guy who's just either got a plane or you're going to be building your own plane.
Or if you're like John Travolta and your driveway, you know, is a runway.
Yes. Or that. But, I mean, what you really want is you want a helicopter. So as you're sitting on the 5 and some jagoff from Idaho is blocking your way, you can just be like, F this, straight up. That's it. And they know this, and that's why they haven't made it legal.
Yeah. Well, that would just be chaos. If we could all afford those,
yes,
it would be just anarchy.
Well, I'm not saying everybody should get one. I'm talking about me. Me, Rick Emerson, I need one. That's it. A car that can just launch straight up. And, in fact, here's the other thing. I don't know why they don't invent planes that can do that. Like, why haven't they invented a plane? This is not a thing I'm really asking, so please just pull yourself away from the text box, whoever you are, because I can sense you through the force starting to type a response. Why haven't they invented a plane that can just go straight up and then just start flying forward?
Because then it would be a helicopter.
Okay, but a wiseacre, I understand the difference between a helicopter and an airplane, but I'm saying a plane that can take off straight up before then flying forward at regular plane speeds. Because think about all the space you would save in terms of runways and whatever. You don't know the answer, do you? See, no one knows.
I can think of a number of answers, but you don't really want to get into this right now, do you?
Not really. I just like to
The plane
speculate.
Would have to have like a propeller on top, and that would have to go up, and then you have to like have these like super jet engines so that it could like build up enough force initially to like take off. I mean,
you're already defying the law of gravity. You're flying. It seems like everything else is just a matter of degrees.
Once you're actually airborne, it's not magic. There's still, you know, aerodynamics and science involved.
You know, it's people like you that make inventors just go down to their basement and shut the door and lock out all of humanity to get away from the the sort of nattering nabobs of negativism that plague their existence.
I want a car that just turns into a bed. That I could just pull over and just make it into a bed and then just sleep for a while.
You know, if you live in my neighborhood, you don't even really need it to turn into anything. It just magically becomes one. By the way, speaking of my neighborhood and beds, so I think it was Saturday after we had gone to the Fun Employment Radio Listener Party, which had been Saturday night at the Hawthorne Theater. And Laura and I got home. We got out of the car, and it's, you know, we're getting ready to go inside, and we hear this sort of sound of somebody rolling something or dragging something. We couldn't quite figure out what it was. And we looked, and there's, you know, our street's fairly deserted late at night. I mean, it was like 1, 2 in the morning or something. And I swear to God, there was a guy with a full-size sofa and what appeared to be in almost perfect condition. A homeless guy, clearly homeless, carrying along a bunch of tin cans and a bag lashed to his belt. A guy pushing a full-on sofa on top of a shopping cart just down the middle of the street. Wheels sort of clattering, and you know, and he's just sort of a massive sofa, probably 100 times bigger than the shopping cart, just pushing the sofa itself on top of a grocery cart down the middle of the road. And we just, and it was this great sort of intermission of life where we just sat for like 5 minutes and just sort of slowly watched him roll it by. No idea where he was going, no idea from where he was coming. Here's Dawn Taylor.
By
the way, you're laughing at me, by the way.
No, I'm just from the text box. Listeners have pointed out that in their inimitable way, welcome to the 1980s, Rick. Ever heard of a Harrier jet? Apparently the Harrier or jump jet does launch straight up, and also there's a new joint strike fighter. Then both have vertical liftoff.
Are these real planes, or are these sort of when you're fighting the Covenant planes?
they're from World of Warcraft.
I was just going to say, as long as this is not, I mean, as long as you didn't see Master Chief flying it around, then I suppose I will. All right. Well, fair enough. I have heard of the Harrier. I guess that's one of those things where I think the whole plane. Please, no more clarification on this. But I think that's where the whole plane or the whole wing, section itself turns. The whole wing mechanism actually turns. I don't know. All right. Well, whatever. Fine.
Emergency room doctors called for an end to raves at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum after more than 100 people were taken to hospitals during a weekend event. At least 2 people were in intensive care for drug intoxication at California Hospital Medical Center, including 1 minor. Another minor was rushed to Good Samaritan Hospital, comatose, according to Los Angeles Times. Authorities said Sunday that some were hurt as people rushed barriers trying to get into the 14th annual Electric Daisy Carnival without the $75 admission ticket. The event featured rides and 5 stages with performances by Moby and Will.i.am.
Does this officially count as a rave if Moby is playing there and if it's a ticketed event for $75?
And if there's carnival ride?
And if there's carnival ride. I just like the idea of a carnival ride being run by a guy who's like rolling out of his mind on ecstasy. Just sort of a, where's the off switch? Oh, it's beautiful. And meanwhile, the thing is plummeting into the bay. That's awesome.
Well, organizers said it drew about 185,000 people on Friday and Saturday. There were 226 requests for medical aid, the fire department spokesman said. Of those, 114 people were transported to hospitals. Injuries included people who had fallen, people who were hit intentionally or otherwise. Some appeared to be convulsing or dizzy or faint. This is basically a government-encouraged drug fest. That's the wrong message,
fantastic.
Dr. Brian Johnston of the emergency room at White Memorial Medical Center told The Times. It's putting people at risk unnecessarily. It's putting people's health at risk. The Coliseum, which is built on state land, is run by a joint city, county, and state commission. The Coliseum does not receive any taxpayer subsidies and is financially independent. It's expected to earn well over six figures from this weekend's rave, or as much profit as a couple of USC games, the general manager told the LA Times.
Wait, so this is one of those things where it's like the government has, because the county or the city, whoever's putting this on, right? And so they've just kind of co-opted like the actual rave, and they've just begun putting it on, and people go. I mean, if you go, well, here's the thing: if you're looking for an actual rave and you go to this thing instead, I mean, that's sort of a caveat emptor thing as well. It seems like the city is really not. That's not the group of folks in whose hands you want to place your own life when you're going to a rave.
Yeah, 185,000 people is not a rave.
No,
that's Disneyland. That's That's a city unto itself. That's Woodstock. What the hell?
I am guessing that I don't know because I wasn't there, but I'm guessing that if I had to punt on it, I'm guessing the average age at this alleged rave was like 42. That's just my my theory. All right, here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
I believe it's time for entertainment news.
Here is your entertainment news for Tuesday on Legion of News.
Transformers actress Megan Fox
and
former 90210 star Brian Austin Green have tied the knot, according to media reports. The celebrity website TMZ.com reported that the two married a small, intimate ceremony at the Four Seasons Resort on Hawaii's Big Island. About a half dozen people were in attendance. It's the first marriage for both. They met on the TV show Hope and Faith in 2004 and have been dating on and off ever since.
What is the show Hope and Faith?
That was the one with Kelly Ripa and somebody blonde.
I'm getting a whole 404 error. I've got nothing. And somebody blonde. No, Kelly Ripa and somebody blonde.
Woman.
Jamie Presley?
English accent was on Murphy Brown. Anyway.
All right.
It was her and Kelly Ripa.
Was this it?
It was Kelly Ripa. They played sisters.
Kelly Ripa. See, here's the thing: that would have been, I guess, after she took over for Kathy Lee Gifford, right?
Yeah, Faith Ford.
Faith Ford. Because I have no recollection of Kelly Ripa existing before Regis tapped her to come onto the show.
Yeah, but when she went on Regis, she was also doing that sitcom Hope and Faith. She was doing like three things simultaneously. I think she was also on a sitcom at the same time and.
So she was
NASCAR. I don't know. She was doing all these things all at the same time.
She was an extant property before Regis plucked her from nowhere for stardom.
Right. She started out fairly young. She played I remember this because she back in the day when I still watched soap operas.
I knew you were going to say soap opera.
She
I knew
played,
it.
It was either All My Children, One Life to Live. She played a teenager on one of those shows.
Excellent. All right. Didn't they just cancel one of those the other day with one of those long running sort of?
Yeah, I think so.
Another light or different world or whatever the hell they was. You know, one of those things that's been on since 1917.
Was it Guiding Light?
Maybe no. See, I think Guiding Light got canceled years ago because that was the at the time. I think Guiding Light was the longest running soap opera in network, and it was on CBS. And I was still working at CBS at the time, and there was this whole. You know, it's the end of an era. And it was, you know, one of those shows that originally had been brought to you by 20 Mule Team Borax.
Maybe it was As the World Turns.
Maybe.
I don't know.
All right.
I
got nothing. That has got to suck. I mean, it's got to suck being an actor anyway. By the way, coming up next hour in the Rick Emerson Show, I should mention this. Next hour in the Rick Emerson Show, we have what I believe Don Taylor termed an exciting announcement. I think that's the superlative upon which we decided.
Was it? I thought I said it was...
A damn cool,
damn cool.
Fine.
Damn cool.
It's a swell announcement. So we have a nice piece of news that's going to be coming up next hour. Also, Christy Turnquist from The Oregonian, pop culture editor from The Oregonian, will be joining us here in the Emerson News Network studios.
I'll bet she'll know which soap opera was canceled.
Probably. Here's the thing. This is my prediction about Christy Turnquist, who we love. I mean, she's one of her favorite people. But I bet she'll say it, but if she knows... She'll lower her voice and she'll say it with this palpable sense of shame, as though she ought not to know about this. Like every time she writes something about Twilight, which is like every day, I think, we're in the middle of some whole Twilight nexus where it cannot be gotten away from. Christy Turnquist from The Oregonian, another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today we answer the mathematical question, is a single Pop-Tart still in fact called a Pop-Tarts? That is coming up later on today. And I will be recreating at least one of my many failed auditions for the television program Leverage with one of my many failed accents. One of my many abysmal attempts to sound like someone other than myself. Would you think I'd know by now? I mean, I guess I do know by now it doesn't work, but Somebody somewhere didn't get the memo, so they keep calling me. So that is coming up at 1 o'clock.
They keep hearing you do Bill on True Blood and thinking, wow, this guy is awesome.
He's
with accents.
He's a prodigy. Again, we've got to get him here now. Well, it's funny you say that because the first I have had to audition for Leverage. I've had the pleasure of auditioning for Leverage a couple of times now. And each time with a different accent. So I might let you pick the one that I recreate.
Oh,
that's coming up at 1 o'clock. It's part of the Rick Emerson Show, to which you can now give a gift subscription, by the way. This is Don Taylor.
Oh, the text box, someone requests that you do something as a Cockney chimney sweep.
Okay, I'll get right on that.
Vince Neil, the former lead singer of the heavy metal band Motley Crue, has been arrested in Las Vegas for allegedly driving under the influence. Neil, 49, was booked at the Clark County Detention Center and faces one count of DUI liquor. Las Vegas police spokesman Bill Cassell said he was arrested about 11:15 p.m. Sunday. The singer was also allegedly involved in an incident in front of a Hilton hotel where a fan said her camera was broken. Police are investigating that incident.
By the way, if you're Vince Neil, and I mean this is all just goes without saying at this point, I almost shouldn't have to make this observation. I have said for the longest time that if you're a celebrity, just get someone to drive you. If you've got money, think of how many celebrity arrests or bad mugshots or revelations, Tiger Woods, would be avoided if you just had somebody to drive you around if you have the money to do it, right? And especially Vince Neil, because, I mean, even you know this, Don. As Judd Nelson says in the movie Airheads, Vince Neil only did 30 days, and he killed a guy. I mean, so the last time Vince Neil was known to have driven drunk, that ended poor. It ended with him having to do that thing where he goes from high school going, I'm Vince Neil. I killed a guy. I got to stay here for 38 minutes. So you guys got a smoking area at this school? I mean, that's pretty much it. So you just don't do that.
Or if you are, say, a former actress, Amy Locane, who starred on Melrose Place and in such films as Crybaby, School Ties, and Airheads. No longer being an actress or a real celebrity, you can't afford to have someone drive you anywhere.
No, I have to give you props there for a second. Did you just now, from memory, note that she was in Airheads?
Yes.
Because I just made an Airheads reference right now because of the Vince Neil thing.
I know.
Did you just tie
it's
that together
eerie.
With a story in your hand?
I did.
That
it's
is fantastic.
Eerie.
All right.
She was charged with second-degree vehicular homicide
oh.
in an alleged drunk driving accident in Montgomery, New Jersey on Sunday night that killed one person and seriously injured another. The Newark Star-Ledger reports that Locane, who lives in Hopewell, New Jersey, and uses her married name of Amy Locane Bovenizer, crashed her SUV into another car that was pulling out of a driveway. The passenger of that vehicle was killed. The driver was airlifted to the hospital, where he remains in critical condition. Authorities said she admitted she had consumed several glasses of wine that evening. They also alleged she was involved in a minor hit-and-run accident in Princeton, New Jersey, earlier that night, and that witnesses informed police that she drove away erratically from the scene, knocking over mailboxes. Bail has been set at $50,000.
I know that somebody died in this story, but life is for the living, so the laughter goes on. Bovenizer?
Yes, B-O-V-E-N-I-Z-E-R.
By God, that's Bovenizer. You're sure that's not a machine that her family manufactures or something? You know that it made her fortune from the Bovenizer, legacy established by her grandfather in 18... I don't even know what a Bovenizer would do, actually. All right, well, whatever. Was she the hot secretary in Airheads? Was that her, or was she Brendan Fraser's girlfriend?
She was Brendan Fraser's girlfriend.
Oh, I care less about her. You know who I care about? Was that that chick with the big cakes who was making out with Adam Sandler on the couch at one point? We had all the bad makeup, like the heavy lipstick.
Yeah. Amy Locane was the blonde in Crybaby opposite Johnny Depp.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Mark Paul Gosselaar has split with his wife, Lisa Ann Russell.
Say it isn't so.
The former Saved by the Bell and Raising the Bar star, 36, filed for divorce June 18th in L.A. Superior Court, 2 weeks after the couple announced their separation. Gosselaar and Russell got married in 1996 and have two children, Michael Charles, 6, and Ava Loren, 4. Citing irreconcilable differences, the actor is seeking joint custody of the children.
The next person who says irreconcilable differences, it's a tasing. It's a tasing for you. I'm sick of hearing that. The least you can do is give us... Look, if you're not going to be on television giving us actual entertainment in the form of a program, you could at least let us peer into the life of your messy divorce. We want to know what that's all about.
He was also on NYPD Blue, so it's interesting that they mentioned Raising the Bar, which was some crappy lawyer show that no one watched.
And that must have been, like, way late in the Jimmy Smits era, right? I mean, that was...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the bulk of that, like 98.9% of that show is the Jimmy Smits era. So, all right. Well, whatever you do. There's Mark Paul Gosselaar. And he was also in Raising the Bar, which is what?
It's some TV series about lawyers. I've never
watched
it.
Are you speculating on that?
No, I knew that it was about lawyers. I never watched it.
Hey, you know whatever happened to that show Shark that James Woods was in?
I have no idea.
I think that show went away, which is too bad because it was terrible, but in the greatest way possible, where he was actually chewing and digesting and excreting the scenery, you know, just while you watched. It was awesome. The thing about Mark Paul Gosselaar having been in that show Raising the Bar, which I've never heard, we've now reached this era where you don't even really need to pad your resume anymore. Because there are 5 billion channels, each of them burning out and replacing television shows faster than they can be made, almost. So it's like, by the time you're 5, you could probably have an IMDb list that just, you know, is like 80 titles long. You know, because as soon as you come out of the womb, a guy, would you like a development deal? I mean, and then you're on TV.
There's a new series, the new series that Jason Lee is doing, Memphis Beat. I watched the first episode of that. And one of the secondary character police officers, support characters, is, I never know the actor's name, the guy who played Kubiak on Parker Lewis.
Yes.
And he's made an entire career of playing guys in support positions on TV series. He was on ER for years as, like, guy who works front desk.
Right.
There was just, there was some other show that just, like, came and went very, very quickly, like Happy Town.
I forgot all about that show.
Which has already been canceled.
Yeah.
And he was on that as, like, guy who runs the bar and is friends with the main guy. I mean, he's always, like, the C-level character. And he keeps just popping up there. And you always go, oh, it's the Coob.
You may know him from his roles as a minor clerical worker in such films as... Well, that's like I think it was Dennis Miller at one time who talked about it. He had made a Bordello of Blood notwithstanding, that Dennis Miller had made a career out of being one specific kind of character in films. And the Dennis Miller role that he played always, see, for example, The Net with Sandra Bullock, and I think Murder at 1600 maybe with Wesley Snipes, but I could be making that up. I think what Dennis Miller decided his role was, he is the best friend to whom the main character expounds the entire plot for the benefit of the audience before he, the side character, is then killed. Yeah. So you're saying the government is trying to have you killed because you accidentally hacked into a database and discovered that they are selling weapons to the Iranians. And so you are on the run. And then, like, the next day he's found in a sewer, you know, like, with no head. So there you go. See Dennis Miller on roll. Is that the end of entertainment news?
That is the end of entertainment news. From the text box, Mark Paul Gosselaar was on NYPD Blue after Jimmy Smith's. Both he and Rick Schroeder played Sipowicz's partner for a bit of time.
I swear to, for a minute, I thought you were going to say that Mark Paul Gosselaar was on the text box clarifying something for us, which wouldn't be like outside the realm of possibility at this point.
What else is he doing?
I think we had Dustin Diamond on the show at one point in years past. I honestly can't remember, which I don't know who that is. I don't know if that is my bad memory or the fact that he's Dustin Diamond. I think I
told you this one. A friend of mine and I were in Bend for a week. And there's a comedy club in Bend, and the marquee just said, you know, this weekend, Screech from Saved by the... They didn't even actually use his real name. It just said... It just said Screech Saved by the Bell.
Because why would you? I mean, what is to be gained by saying Dustin Diamond? I mean, it's probably 25% of the people are going to know who that is, and half of them are going to go, oh, that guy's a dick. But if you say Screech, you immediately get into the, you know, at least you can mind a little bit of nostalgia, try to get something, a little bit of cover at the door. When I saw Dustin Diamond do his alleged stand-up at Dante's downtown, that was one of the worst nights of my life. And all I had to do, by the way, was walk in and sit down at a table and then leave again later. That's it. I didn't have to do anything. I wasn't introducing him. I wasn't the MC. It wasn't like I had any job to perform there. I just went to watch because I think he had been on the show. And then he was opened for – the opening act was Richard Cheese. He was a longtime friend of the show. And he'd been on in the studio the day. And he was like, yeah, I'm opening for this cat, Screech. Anyway, here's a song about – and so I was like, well, I'll go see Richard Cheese and then, you know, Screech. And It was sad. I think he came out to the rapturous applause of maybe 9 people. And it became that whole thing of every time someone would leave, it became harder for the next person to leave because eventually everybody was in and of themselves like 39% of the audience. And so it's like, oh God, if I leave, I'm taking half the crowd with me. Ah, crap. And so what we all did is, and we were all kind of making eye contact in the room, like, I don't know how we're going to get out of here. Oh, my God, he's drinking water. Like, make a break for it. And as soon as when he turned his back to guzzle from his water bottle, turning his back to the audience, bad
Someone
move.
Would just make a break for it?
The remaining three of us, we all just left. And so I almost wanted to lean back around the corner, sort of like, you know, and just see what his reaction was. Because when he turned back around, there was no one there.
Oh, God.
We were all gone, baby. So there you go. Ah, Dustin Diamond.
And referencing an earlier question, Shark, the James Woods show, was canceled after three seasons and is rerun on ION television each week.
You know, but they probably never resolved anything. That's the pity of that show. It probably is just ended in some sort of dangling cliffhanger that'll never be taken care of for me. Not unlike Duckman.
Exposure to the oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico has resulted in 162 cases of illnesses reported to the Louisiana State Health Department, according to a report released Monday. Of those cases, 128 involved workers on oil rigs or individuals involved in the oil spill cleanup efforts. Among the most common reported symptoms are throat irritation, shortness of breath, coughing, eye irritation, nausea, and headaches, according to the department's oil spill surveillance report. The weekly report gathers data from a surveillance network of doctors, clinics, emergency care locations, and medical facilities. Several of the workers who fell ill reportedly had been exposed to fumes from the dispersants being deployed in the Gulf. Most of those affected worked on the cleanup efforts in some way. 23 of them with symptoms worked on an oil rig. Most workers went to an emergency room or an urgent care center where they developed symptoms. At least 21 people were briefly hospitalized. In a related development, Louisiana Department of Health and Hospitals Secretary Alan Levine said Monday that BP will pay $10 million to fund 6 months of mental health services to people affected by the spill. He said there exists anger, anxiety, and uncertainty among the families and communities affected by the spill, which will easily manifest into addiction and various forms of mental health crisis if not confronted.
I'm sure $10 million will cover that. Here's something, I don't mean to sound daft, and I'm not trying to make light of the whole thing down there. I honestly don't know. Is that thing fixed? I mean, have they plugged it? Is it just is it still just spilling oil into the ocean? I honestly don't know.
It's still spilling oil into the ocean, and there are a number of experts who believe that it's going to be a very, very long time before it stops, because there's no real way to just stop it. If they try to plug it in some way, the pressure from everything that is continuing to go forward through the rest of the pipeline will spout. Other leaks elsewhere because the pressure will build up.
I guess I don't have any real sense as to how this is designed, because I'm a product of an American school. In my mind's eye, like it's just, and I know this isn't the case. In my mind's eye, though, it's just like a hole. There's a hole in the bottom of the sea. There's just a big hole, and then a guy has put like a little metal rigging over it. And then is running it up into a hose, and so you just you just cover up the hole with rock or whatever is filling the hole to begin with. But I realize the hole is probably large, and also here's the other thing I think about. Go ahead.
Well, did you see There Will Be Blood?
Yes, I did.
Okay, well, think about the whole milkshake metaphor.
You know how to explain things to me.
There's the milkshake, and then you've got the long straw,
right.
And that's basically your pipeline. And a hole, and think about how a straw works. You get a hole in the straw, and it starts gushing out of the hole.
Right, right.
If there's pressure, if, say, somebody was on the other end blowing through the straw,
yes,
forcing it through, because there is a lot of pressure coming from the actual well.
Right.
If you plugged it, the pressure would continue. And so any weaknesses along that straw would be compromised. And so you would actually have more. They can basically they can allow it all to gush out and collect it. They can collapse the well. They can destroy the actual well.
See, that's
itself.
What I was thinking. It's like you just get rid of the pipe and then just plug the hole.
But then they don't get any of that oil.
Well, they're not getting any of the oil now.
They are if they let it just spill into the Gulf and kill everything, and then they collect it. Because the thing is, BP,
the fish are hogging it all.
We aren't. No one is actually nationalizing that oil. They aren't saying, "Well, you know something? It's dumped into the Gulf of Mexico. You don't get it anymore." BP is still getting to keep the oil.
Well, but if the all right, I have no idea how anything works. All right, well, there you go. We'll figure all this out at some point. This is Legion of News. Don't forget, this program will be archived right here at pdx.fm later on in the day. You can also find complete archives at legionofnews.com. And for folks, we did on the Facebook yesterday, there were a couple folks who had posted saying that the archives were not visible. They couldn't see them. And we kind of looked at, and I actually had several people. I had people in, I swear to God, I had people in three different states log on. And I said, hey, go to this page, click on this thing, look at the deal. Are you seeing a show? Click on it. Does it play? Fine. Okay. So so I really have no explanation for why a handful of people could not see, and I, maybe as of this morning, still couldn't see the archive. I hate to be the guy at tech support telling you, have you closed your browser? It is entirely possible that you were just viewing a previous or cached version of the page, but hopefully that will remedy itself as of today, just sort of magically. Coming up in just moments over at RickEmerson.com, the Rick Emerson Show begins today. We have a spiffy announcement of damn fine proportions. Also, Christy Turnquist to the Oregonian. I'll be recreating one of my many failed leverage auditions, and we'll have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. Today's question is a single Pop-Tart, in fact, just called a Pop-Tarts. That is coming up later on. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget, you can listen on your mobile device at mobile, M-O-B-I-L-E, mobile.pdx.fm. Ladies and gentlemen, this is
Legion of News on PDX.fm.